The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Chapter 25, Towards the Supramental Time Vision, the second reading of this chapter, near the bottom of page 889. This is because the mind in the ignorance lives in the moment and moves from hour to hour like a traveler who sees only what is near and visible around his immediate standpoint and remembers imperfectly what he has passed through before. But all in front beyond his immediate view is the unseen and unknown of which he has yet to have experience. Therefore, man, in his self-ignorance, moving in time, exists, as the Buddhists saw, only in the succession of thoughts and sensations, and of the external forms present to his thought and sense. His present momentary self is alone real to him. His past self is dead, or vanishing, or only preserved in memory, result and impression. His future self is entirely non-existent or only in process of creation or preparation of birth. And the world around him is subject to the same rule of perception. Only its actual form and sum of happenings and phenomena is present and quite real to him. Its past is no longer in existence, or abides only in memory and record, and in so much of it as has left its dead monuments or still survives into the present. The future is not yet at all in existence. It must be noted, however, that if our knowledge of the present were not limited by our dependence on the physical mind and sense, this result would not be altogether inevitable. If we could be aware of all the present, all the action of physical, vital, mental energies at work in the moment, it is conceivable that we would be able to see their past too, involved in them, and their latent future, or at least to proceed from present to past and future knowledge. And under certain conditions, this might create a sense of real and ever-present time continuity, a living in the behind and the front as well as the immediate, and a step farther might carry us into an ever-present sense of our existence in infinite time, and in our timeless self, and its manifestation in eternal time might then become real to us, and also we might feel the timeless self behind the worlds, and the reality of his eternal world manifestation. In any case, the possibility of another kind of time consciousness than we have at present, and of a triple time knowledge, rests upon the possibility of developing another consciousness than that proper to the physical mind and sense, and breaking our imprisonment in the moment and in the mind of ignorance with its limitation to sensation, memory, inference, and conjecture. Actually, man is not content solely with living in the present, though it is that he does with the most pressing vividness and insistence. He is moved to look before and after, to know as much as he can of the past, and try to penetrate as far as he can, however obscurely, into the future. And he has certain aids towards this endeavor, of which some depend on his surface mind, while others, open to intimations from another subliminal or superconscious self, which has a greater, subtler, and more certain knowledge. His first aid is that of the reason proceeding forward from cause to effect and backward from effect to cause, discovering the law of energies and their assured mechanic process, assuming the perpetual sameness of the movements of nature, fixing her time measures, and thus calculating on the basis of a science of general lines and assured results, the past and the future. A certain measure of limited but sufficiently striking success has been gained by this method in the province of physical nature. And it might seem that the same process might eventually be applied to the movements of mind and life, and that, at any rate, this alone is man's one reliable means in any field of looking with precision back and forwards. But, as a matter of fact, the happenings of vital and still more of mental nature escape, to a very great degree, the means of inference and calculation from assured law that apply in the field of physical knowledge. It can apply there only to a limited range of regularized happenings and phenomena, and for the rest leaves us where we were, amid a mixed mass of relative certainties, uncertain probabilities, and incalculable possibilities. This is because mind and life bring in a greater subtlety and intricacy of movement. Each realized movement carries in it a complex of forces. And even if we could disengage all these, all, that is to say, that are simply actualized and on or near the surface, we should still be baffled by all the rest that is obscure or latent. Concealed and yet potent contributory causes, hidden motion and motive force, undeployed possibilities, uncalculated and incalculable chances of variation. It ceases to be practicable here for our limited intelligence to calculate accurately and with certitude, as in the physical field, from precise cause to precise effect. That is to say, from a given apparent set of existing conditions to an inevitable resultant of subsequent or a necessary precedence of antecedent conditions. It is, for this reason, that the predictions and provisions of the human intelligence are constantly baffled and contradicted by the event, even when largest in their view of the data and most careful in their survey of possible consequence. Life and mind, or a constant flux of possibles intervening between spirit and matter, and at each step bring in, if not an infinite, at least an indefinite of possibles. And this would be enough to make all logical calculation uncertain and relative. But, in addition, there reigns behind them a supreme factor, incalculable by human mind, the will of the soul and secret spirit, the first indefinitely variable, fluid, and elusive, the second infinite and inscrutably imperative, bound, if at all, only by itself and the will in the infinite. It is therefore only by going back from the surface physical mind to the psychic and spiritual consciousness that a vision and knowledge of the triple time, transcendence of our limitation to the standpoint and view range of the moment, can be wholly possible. Meanwhile, there are certain doors opening from the inner onto the outer consciousness, which make an occasional but insufficient power of direct retrovision of the past, circumvision of the present, prevision of the future, even in the physical mind, at least potentially feasible. First, there are certain movements of the mind sense and the vital consciousness that are of this character, of which one kind, that which has most struck our perceptions, has been called presentiment. These movements are instinctive perceptions, obscure intuitions of the sense mind and the vital being, and like all that is instinctive in man, have been suppressed, rendered rare, or discredited as unreliable by the engrossing activity of the mental intelligence. If allowed a free scope, these could develop and supply data not available to the ordinary reason and the senses. But still, they would not be of themselves perfectly useful or reliable indices unless their obscurity were enlightened by an interpretation and guidance which the ordinary intelligence cannot give. But a higher intuition could provide. Intuition, then, is the second and more important possible means available to us. And actually, intuition can and does sometimes give us in this difficult field an occasional light and guidance. But acting in our present mentality, it is subject to the disadvantage that it is uncertain in operation, imperfect in its functioning, obscured by false imitative movements of the imagination, and fallible mental judgment, and continually seized on and alloyed and distorted by the normal action of mind with its constant liability to error. The formation of an organized intuitive mentality purified from these deficiencies would be needed to enlarge and assure this possibility of the functioning of a higher luminous intelligence. Man, confronted by this incapacity of the intelligence and yet avid of the knowledge of the future, has fallen back on other and external means, omens, sortilages, dreams, astrology, and many other alleged data for a past and future knowledge that have been in less skeptical times formulated as veridical sciences. Challenged and discredited by the skeptical reason, these still persist in attracting our minds and hold their own, supported by desire and credulity and superstition, but also by the frequent, though imperfect, evidence we get of a certain measure of truth in their pretensions. A higher psychical knowledge shows us that, in fact, the world is full of many systems of correspondences and indices, and that these things, however much misused by the human intelligence, can, in their place and under right conditions, give us real data of a supraphysical knowledge. It is evident, however, that it is only an intuitive knowledge that can discover and formulate them, as it was, in fact, the psychical and intuitive mind that originally formulated these ways of veridical knowledge. And it will be found in practice that only an intuitive knowledge, not the mere use either of a traditional or a haphazard interpretation or of mechanical rule and formula, can ensure a right employment of these indices. Otherwise, handled by the surface intelligence, they are liable to be converted into a thick jungle of error. The true and direct knowledge or vision of past, present, and future begins with the opening of the psychical consciousness and the psychical faculties. The psychical consciousness is that of what is now often called the subliminal self, the subtle or dream self of Indian psychology, and its range of potential knowledge, almost infinite, as has been pointed out in the last chapter, includes a very large power and many forms of insight into both the possibilities and the definite actualities of past, present, and future. Its first faculty, that which most readily attracts attention, is its power of seeing by the psychical sense images of all things in time and space. As exercised by clairvoyants, mediums, and others, this is often, and indeed usually, a specialized faculty limited, though often precise and accurate in action, and implies no development of the inner soul, or the spiritual being, or the higher intelligence. It is a door opened by chance, or by an innate gift, or by some kind of pressure between the waking and the subliminal mind, and admitting only to the surface or the outskirts of the latter. All things in a certain power and action of the secret universal mind are represented by images. Not only visual, but, if one may use the phrase, auditory, and other images. And a certain development of the subtle or psychical senses makes it possible, if there is no interference of the constructing mind and its imaginations, if, that is to say, artificial or falsifying mental images do not intervene, if the psychical sense is free, sincere, and passive. To receive these representations or transcriptions with a perfect accuracy, and not so much predict as see in its correct images the present, beyond the range of the physical sense, the past, and the future. The accuracy of this kind of seeing depends on its being confined to a statement of the thing seen and the attempt to infer, interpret, or otherwise go beyond the visual knowledge may lead to much error, unless there is, at the same time, a strong psychical intuition, fine, subtle, and pure, or on a high development of the luminous intuitive intelligence. Pausing here, near the bottom of page 894, to be continued with a third reading next time.